Welcome to the Banker Exchange, our weekly sit-down about what is happening now, what the industry is chatting about, and what bankers like you need to know.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Banker Exchange, a podcast from The Banker. I'm Liz Lumley, and joining me today is Alex Jimenez. Hello, Alex.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, very good. So as our audience knows, The Banker Exchange is our weekly sit-down about newsy bits that influence current and future stories on thebanker.com. So Alex, this is a treat for me, and I greatly appreciate you waking up early in the U.S. to record this podcast with us, because I think our entire relationship has just been online, and I don't think we've ever met in real life. Am I right in that?
That is true. Yes.
Yeah. I'm trying to think like how long, like when it was probably Twitter, the poor rest in peace Twitter, maybe a long time ago. Yes. But it kind of, you know, a bit of bonus info for our audience. We also both attended the same university.
You did, but you're much younger than I am. And so I was there way before you.
Yeah. At different times. Lovely Hofstra. So both of us ended up in this wonderful world that we call fintech. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about fintech. We're going to talk about innovation and financial services. So our part of our bread and butter stories here at thebanker.com. So I was drawn to a recent blog post that you wrote on your website, where you're looking at comparing innovation versus cost cutting. So it was kind of interesting during the pandemic, you know, which is now 4 years ago, there was this kind of unrelenting refrain that was repeated over and over again on all of those Zoom events and online events that we did in 2020, 2021, where people said that the pandemic was accelerating digital transformation already at play. And it was repeated over and over and over again. Now we are kind of 4 years on, and it seems like innovation as a concept is on the wane at many banks. I think kind of like that culture, not claiming that banks have stopped innovating, so please don't send emails. But it's kind of like this innovation lab and the innovation culture seems to be not as in vogue as it once was a few years ago. And I think there's a lot of good reason for that. There was a lot of, you know, 10 years ago, there was a lot of innovation theater. I took part in a lot of innovation theater, although, oh, the shame. And there was a lot of kind of unkept fintech promises out there. And we're kind of in a new era for financial services and innovation. So Alex, as I stop rambling, what happened? What do you think happened?
Well, first off, I was guilty myself of saying this is going to accelerate innovation. And so I was one of those people saying that, because it looked that way. Mm. And I think what happened is banks went back to what they were doing before. And then came economic conditions that were unfavorable. And here in the U.S. for the past year and a half, 2 years, we've been playing the game of what's going on with the economy. Are we in a recession or not?
Mm.
And, you know, the unemployment numbers say we are not in a recession, but inflation says, well, maybe we are. And we keep playing this game. And so bankers being bankers, meaning they're managing risk, they said, okay, we're going to be most conservative. And therefore, what we're going to do is we're going to hunker down. We're going to increase at loan loss reserves. And while they do all of that, then we have something like SVB suddenly impacting what the industry is doing. We see a lot of deposits moving away from just demand deposits and going back into investments. And it's funny because I see people saying, oh my God, everybody's moving their deposits out. Well, look critically at what has happened, and is during the pandemic, there was a lot of cash that was moved into the into deposit accounts, and some of that's retreating back to investments. So it's So all of these things are happening, and you know, bankers have gotten nervous and have started looking at cost cutting, which is something that we've done. You know, we go through a cycle of, oh, we got to cut costs, things differently. We gotta try to figure out how we can do more with less. But through all of that, they had forgotten that they were already working on figuring out how to be more efficient through this digital transformation that the organizations were going through. So some organizations just kind of threw in the towel and just, you know, started cutting staff, while others said, wait, hold on, we need to just make sure that how we are investing in anything new makes sense, which they should have been all along. So it's a lot of that. That's what I'm seeing. So some organizations that did not have discipline before are now just doing cost cutting. And then the organizations that had discipline took innovation, dressed it up as cost efficiency.
Maybe just arguing the other side, though, for a bit. I mean, I know it is kind of annoying when it, you know, these actions are called streamlining and creating efficiencies when it's cost cutting. But, you know, when you look at maybe some of the excesses of the first wave of fintech innovation, do you think maybe a bit of a culling needed to happen in order to, you know, to get to the real work?
Absolutely. So, you know, let's go back 10 years ago. And there were banks that were throwing money at blockchain without a reason for it, right? I remember being in meetings where bankers would say, we need to figure out how we can use blockchain. And they would come up with ideas that made no sense, right? How do we use blockchain for our CRM? That makes no sense. Those sort of projects just have disappeared and should have never had started. So some of that definitely needed some culling for sure.
I forgot to fully introduce you when the start of this podcast, because I know that you've been in the industry for a while, and you're a writer and a speaker, and you're currently a principal consultant at Backbase. So you have a lot of sort of background in talking a lot of these issues. So I want to talk a little bit about regulations. Mm-hmm. So I went to a roundtable the other week, and I wrote a blog post about it because I was a bit annoyed at some of the answers that were coming from some of the speakers. And one of the things that kind of bugged me was they had kind of not only a weak grasp of some of the regulations that were impacting their sector, they didn't even know what they were. They had to be informed of some really well-known, especially in the UK, and regulations affecting the payments industry and consumer-facing fintech. And I found that kind of annoying. But there tends to be, and I'm going to get DMs about this, there's a certain type of consumer-facing fintech, kind of Silicon Valley-type tech culture, which feels that, you know, regulations are something to either ignore or try to get ahead of or not pay attention to. And I don't think that works in financial services. So, I mean, how expensive is not understanding the regulations that could sink your business, Alex?
Well, we're seeing it here in the U.S. with some fintechs that were full tilt on banking as a service. I won't name names, but there's a couple of them that have recently stopped operating or have sold, or their assets were taken over by others. And the reason for that is just that thinking that we are smarter than everyone else. We are developers. We understand how to use technology to challenge those boring, non-innovative bankers that are out there.
And yes. So the uncool bankers and the cool tech people. We all know the narrative.
Yeah. And, you know, I cannot tell you how many times I've had discussions with founders or wannabe founders who have a really great idea, But they just don't understand the industry, and don't understand why things are the way they are. They think it's just because of regulation, and therefore they just ignore the, you know, what they see as limitations that come from just legacy thinking that bankers have. And, you know, sometimes it's because you can't do that, right? It's not permissible to do what you think should be done. A bit of an extreme example, when I worked at a bank, I got a phone call from a young man who just graduated from university with a degree in computer science, a double major, computer science and finance, and he knew everything in his mind. And he had gotten a few friends together, and they had were kicking ideas about a payments fintech serving the mortgage industry. And their thought in the U.S. was, why do banks use wire to send payments? Why couldn't you use another method? He called me because he wanted to get the opinion of a banker. So I told them the reason why we use wire instead of ACH or some other electronic transfer functionality. And he was really quiet once I explained it. And turned out that him and his friends had spent about a year and ungodly many hours pursuing this idea, but never actually checking the reason for it. And so, you know, they had to figure something else out, because what they were trying to do in the market is something that wasn't appropriate. And at the end of the day was, we use wires because they are more secure. And, you know, we're moving, large amounts of money when, you know, we're giving somebody $1 million mortgage. And he thought, well, you know, just like I get money from my friends from Venmo, I could do the same thing with a mortgage company, right? And that's a bit of an extreme example, but that's sort of the thinking that you see in with a lot of organizations out there. They don't understand the industry. They see it as being fairly simple, and in some ways it is, but, you know, there are guardrails there for a reason.
I was speaking to JP Morgan a few weeks ago, and 50% of the B2B payments in the US are checks.
Yes. And part of that is because we haven't had regulation that says you need to move elsewhere. Mm. If I'm a small business, it's so much easier to just write something in a piece of paper called a check and give that to someone than it is to go through the process of setting up an electronic payment. At least that's the thinking. And, you know, I've had many discussions with small business owners that say, this is just easier for me to do. It's easier for me to do if I have if I'm a plumbing contractor, I have 20 trucks out there and people are paying, it's easier for them to just receive a check as opposed to all of them having a device to do cards from our customers, right? And we have not made it easier as bankers for organizations, particularly small businesses. And when you look at the B2B payments, most of those are small business or our brethren in the insurance business, they still use a lot of checks. You know, you get a claim payment and generally that's a check.
I feel bad. I'm just looking at my questions now and I'm thinking that this whole podcast is going to be about talking about things that bug Liz. So it was going back to this round table. I mean, another thing that kind of bugged me, I mean, a number of years ago, you used to get people on stage saying things like, there are more mobile phones than toothbrushes in the world. And, you know, it was supposed to be this incredible nugget of wisdom. And I just sat there and thought, what is that supposed to mean? What does that tell me about anything? And someone talked about, brought up a stat that has since been debunked about young people would rather go to the dentist than their bank, which is so annoying. And it's such trite, meaningless kind of innovation speak that doesn't really look at, you know, actual issues going on in financial services and how emerging technologies will impact this and how customer changing customer behaviors will impact this. And it gets offered up as, again, these nuggets of wisdom. And to me, I maybe I'm being a bit too much of a journalist on this. It just means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. And it does tend to sometimes come, and I can say this because I'm American, it tends to come from like America. It tends to come from this kind of West Coast style tech culture. And I mean, does this talk, like, how prevalent do you hear this talk, and does it get any pushback?
That's funny, because I know exactly where that study came from, and it's an old study. And yeah, the whole dentist, young people rather go to a dentist than a bank, right? It was a study done maybe now 10 years ago by a bank tech company, and it got quoted so many times that
it lost meaning.
Where did it come from? What was that from? And it's just a provocative kind of quote. And part of it is because, you know, people in the fintech world are trying to get bankers to think differently. And there's a need for that. So it's easier to grab onto these little quote unquote nuggets to try to make headway and try to make people think differently. And so I still see or hear those sort of things coming out of Silicon Valley and the other Silicon locations in the US. The dentist one has fallen out of favor. It's really old, but I hear some similar things. The reality is that this whole idea that only young people understand digital is silly. You know, at my previous firm, we did a study last year, and we found that everybody wanted better digital. You know, and millennials wanted digital just as much as Gen Xers and just as much as boomers. The differences were fairly small. Yes, boomers wanted better digital in a less percentage, but it was, you know, 2 percentage points differences. As a culture, we're already moving that way. We already think that way. We're all customers of the Amazons of the world. And so, you know, trying to use these trite, meaningless things really doesn't make a lot of sense.
Going off on kind of a tangent on that, when you mentioned young people, that's another bugbear I have, where everything is just aimed at this sort of mythical group called young people, which changes constantly. And there was a woman from the FCA over here that gave a talk a few years ago that said that they had all these millennial focused fintech companies in their sandbox, and they found out that the average age of their user was somewhere in the late 40s. So I know millennials are hitting their 40s now, but this strange group of young people that only use digital products is a bit of a misnomer. I agree with you on that.
Well, and it's funny because now you hear millennials talking derisively of Gen Zers because these young people don't understand it. And I have a daughter who's 9 years old, so she's actually the next generation, the what so far called Gen Alpha. And as a 90-year-old, she makes fun of the old people who are in high school, which would be then Gen Zers. So we'll just have this forever.
Yeah, I have a 19-year-old at home, and yeah, he's a bit annoying at times. So another blog post, moving on a bit, that I saw you write, where you did a sort of a summary of Money 2020 in Las Vegas. So I've never been to that one. I've been to all the ones in Europe. I probably won't go this year, though, however, which is probably maybe getting into what we're going to discuss next. But I mean, you talked about how the show has kind of changed, and it's very payments orientated in the US, and it's, I think, more bank orientated over here in Europe. But I mean, what are some of your go-to events in the fintech space, and why?
I've been in fintech for more than a decade, so I still like going to Finovate, the various versions of it. And because to me, the whole idea of watching new companies, and generally I prefer when I watch the newer companies pitching something because they generally have a nugget that we haven't thought of before. That's exciting. Many years ago, I met the head of innovation at a large U.S. bank, and is one of the innovative banks. So he actually was doing something. And I asked him that. I asked him the same question. You know, what are your go-to conferences? And he said, not the bank ones. And I said, well, explain that to me. And he said, I go to conferences for other industries. I don't go to bank conferences because I'm going to hear people say the same things over and over again. And I just don't have the time for that. If I'm going to find something new, I'm going to find it elsewhere. Now, I haven't myself followed that, but I'm always intrigued by that idea. I generally, given what I do, you're going to find me at Money 2020, and you're going to find me at a digital banking conference and so on, because, you know, I work for a digital banking platform. If I had the time, I probably would try to go to the South by Southwest.
I've spoken at that.
Yeah, and some people in fintech and some people in banking go to that, but it's a small percentage compared to a Money 2020. You get thousands and thousands of bankers, fintech people together.
Yeah. I spoke on. We were the last panel on the future of finance day, mm-hmm. And on my panel was the only panel with a bank on it.
He's probably the only bank that was there.
So it's interesting. So another thing, I think this is another, you mentioned, you know, blockchain a few minutes ago, and how all the, you know, a few years ago, it was the technology du jour that everyone was getting excited about. So I think now we need to talk about AI and large language models. And, you know, usually you see VCs getting overexcited about how they can make more money very quickly. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I wanted to talk about more about where you're seeing it being used in a kind of basic day-to-day way, not in a kind of scaremongery way, but how do you think it's going to really impact financial services in the next few years?
It has already impacted financial services. Mm-hmm. Of course, it depends how you define AI, but if you're looking at how we have managed fraud, how we manage risk, how we underwrite loans in an automated way, it's a kind of AI, right? The predictive AI that is more traditionally known. We've been using that for more than a decade, and it has gotten better and better. Sure, the large language models are getting a lot of press. Will they be in use in banking? Absolutely. Are they ready for banking? Absolutely not. I think what the buzz is helping the organizations are trying to use more of the traditional AI, if you will, to be accepted by the more of the, you know, the old guard in banking, right? Because they come in, they play with ChatGPT, and they go back to the office and say, we got to put AI into this. And it's funny because I've heard some organizations say, we're going to use generative AI for fraud prevention, which makes me chuckle, because what they really mean is we're going to use a predictive AI, not a large language model, so there's a lot of use of the term to make other kinds of AI and not necessarily generative AI. I see some organizations started to use generative AI generally to augment an employee, whether it's a banker or a contact center person.
Yeah, I've seen it in customer service.
Yeah, it makes sense, but it's not yet ready for, hey, you know, this is Bank XYZ's version of ChatGPT, and, you know, go wild. But, you know, that's not there yet. And it'll be a little bit of time before we can actually do that.
Yep, it's interesting days moving forward. Okay, excellent. So now you are an outside guest here on the Banker Exchange. So we have a new feature that we're calling the time capsule, the Banker Exchange time capsule. So we're asking all of our guests to please put one thing or an idea or an object into our 2024 time capsule, which we will open at some point in the future at the discretion of the Banker editorial team. It might be in a few months' time, who knows, or a few years' time. So what would you like to put in our Banker Exchange time capsule?
Well, we just talked about it. I think we put ChatGPT 4.0 into that time capsule, because at some point we're going to look at it and say, oh my God, we were so silly. Oh, how quaint it was that we were, you know, we had this tool and all we were doing were asking it to do things like, hey, can you write me a 2000 word blog entry? And then what spits out sounds really great. But if you look at it critically, it's not that great. So I hope that we're able to look back and say, this is quaint. And look how young we were then.
Excellent. Alex, thank you so much for joining me on the Banker Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Banker Exchange, part of the portfolio of podcasts from the editorial team at The Banker, available on thebanker.com and wherever you get your podcast fix. Search on The Banker Podcasts to listen to more.